Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Michigan Literary Network radio show hosted by Motown Writers Network. Thank you for joining us. Motown Writers connects writers to their literary goals and readers to Michigan authors. For writers, we have workshops, conferences, networking opportunities, marketing, and promotions, plus resources available online and offline. We invite writers of all stages to our free writers discussions meetings held every second Saturday except in November at the Barnes & Noble's on Wayne State University campus from 10 a.m. to noon. For readers, we provide literary entertainment, book news, and giveaways online and offline. Check out our website for more information at MotownWriters.com. The Michigan Literary Network and Motown Writers annual events offline include the Essence of Motown Literary Conference and Jam, held every second Saturday in November. Also, our literary meet and greet is held in August of every year. Along with that, we have a book club mix and mingle in October. At these events, we invite readers and writers to come together to celebrate the written word, and at most events, they are free to readers. If you're interested in being a guest on our radio show, advertising with us, or promoting your literary project or service, please visit us at MotownWriters.com and click on our contact page for more information. If you're interested in hosting your own show with the Michigan Literary Network, please submit your show proposals to MotownWriters@Yahoo.com. Please share our information with other readers and writers, and we hope you help us continue to strengthen the literary network in Michigan and increase literacy in the Metro Detroit community. For more information, please visit our website at www.MichiganLiteraryNetwork.com.
Hello and welcome to Michigan Literary Network Radio for Wednesday, June 8, 2016. I'm Andrea Daniel, and today we're talking child abuse with author Lisa Gray, whose new book, They Don't Tell, is written from a mother's perspective on the subject. And I am so happy to have Lisa Gray on the line with me. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure to be here with you today.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Lisa, let's start off with you just telling us the story about what happened with your daughter, because it was your daughter who experienced the abuse. What happened that led you up to writing your book, They Don't Tell, Child Abuse, A Mother's Perspective?
Well, actually, it was a series of things that happened. Number one, I think the catalyst was I divorced my ex-husband. It was in about September, and I still remember it was a Sunday after Thanksgiving of that same year. I was in the kitchen about 8 o'clock at night washing dishes, and my 15-year-old daughter came up to me and said, "Mom, if I had something to tell you, would you be a mom or would you be a friend?"
Mm-hmm.
And when she said that, it just struck a chord in me because Nikki had come to me before and said that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when she said it before, my first response is, "I'm your mother. I'm going to be your mother. I'm not trying to be your friend." But when she came back that second time, I knew there was something on her mind, and it was like, okay. So I went in the front room and told my youngest son, I said, "Nikki and I are going upstairs. We're not to be disturbed." So from 8 o'clock that evening, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, until midnight, it took those 4 hours for me to get out of her what her stepfather had been doing to her since I married him when she was in the third grade. So from the third to the 10th grade, that had been her experience. And trust me when I tell you, I was so blindsided. I was in absolute shock that this man who was the minister of music at our church, he was a football coach. He was all around good guy. People would call him for different things. We had taken in a family of foster children, a group of four siblings. During this entire time, he had been molesting my daughter. But what happened, Andrea, was when I divorced him in September, she finally told her friend.
Oh.
And her friend forced her hand because she told me, she said, Mom, I never had any intention to ever tell you. But because she had finally told her friend was like, no, you've got to tell. So it still took a couple of months to tell. But that's what happened. And she still was, that night, was wiggling, trying to wiggle her way out of it. And I have to tell you, I don't remember a lot about that night. All I remember was there was something on her heart that I had to get out, no matter what it was. I don't even remember how, I know it took 4 hours, but I really don't remember what, I don't remember our conversation that night. Because after that, I was like a deer with headlights, you know, I was just in shock.
Right.
This had been going on up under my nose, and I didn't know about it.
Right. Now, the name of your book is They Don't Tell. Did she say, or did you ask, why she didn't tell you, or and why she was not going to tell you? Because you said she didn't have any intention on telling you at all. Did she say why?
We've had a lot of discussions, because now she's 25. We've had a lot of discussions. We've had some counseling. And it's pretty much, I don't think her story is a lot different than most of the people that have been molested. First of all, she didn't know that she was being molested because he groomed her as such a little girl. And then the shame took in. But she also told me that she wanted to protect me. So she was in the, you know, she was, the roles were reversed. Even though we had a great relationship, even though I love my daughter, you know, I'm nowhere near a negligent mother. I worked a lot. But she wanted to protect me because she said, "Well, I didn't want to mess with your happiness."
So,
you know, all the things that she had been told by this man, and never had she been told not to tell, or you know, she said, "I don't remember him ever threatening me," but his sheer position of authority over her. That was all it took, and that's what normally happens. And as I wrote the book and people are sharing their stories with me. Oh, Andrew, the stories are just heartbreaking. But this is happening so often, and in the African-American community, more than I ever knew. But it goes across all racial lines, all socioeconomic barriers. I mean, we have people who are mayors and political offices that are still, they have a secret life, and they manipulate and they control.
Wow.
So that was my story, and it was very difficult. It was, I wrote the book just knowing that even how do I tell the rest of my family? How do I tell her brothers? How do I deal with it in the church? How do I deal with it in the community? My perspective on this was not trying to tell what Nikki's story was, because that's going to be her testimony should she ever decide to talk about it. But the Lord had really impressed upon me that this was what was my journey. You know, I was dealing with my shame of not knowing, with my guilt. I'm the mother. I'm supposed to be there to protect her. How could this be happening? It was very, very difficult. Very difficult for me.
And on your website, you address this. You address what the book is not. You say this is not Nikki's story. It's mine. This is not an expose detailing the abuse my daughter suffered. I am not attempting to tell her story. This is my story, my daughter's help, and with my daughter's help and support. So talk about your feelings about what you learned that your daughter was experiencing, because this is your story.
Well, I learned that, first of all, and what happens with so many of the molested children, they become stagnant, you know, they become stagnant emotionally in that place that they were touched. So we're talking about, in many ways, once it was discovered, Nikki reverted back to that 8-year-old girl and a lot of the things that she did and the clinginess that she had with me. There was no place that I could go without her. She became very clingy, and at the same time, it became very difficult because for the first time, somebody could all of a sudden talk to her about something that had been a secret, that had been her own secret world. So there was so much that I wanted to talk to her about And she was very standoffish about it. So one of the immediate things that I had to do, Andrea, was sit down and have a girl-to-girl talk with her and say, look, I know that there was sex. Look, I don't care how your body may have responded. This is not your fault. Mm-hmm. And I said that to her over and over again, and she gave me a look as if to say, yeah, Ma, you really don't know. No, I do know. I know how God made our bodies. So just because your body may have had a reaction does not mean that you were a willing partner in any of this. And I hear that. Let me tell you, Andrew, even when I talk to other victims, they tell me over and over again they felt like their body betrayed them. So some of the guilt that they're carrying is because of their body reactions. That's how God made us. That has nothing to do with your, did you ever ask this person to come and molest you? No, you did not. You did not. So, you know, part of it with me was to get Nikki to even go back to that time and see yourself not as a 15-year-old developed young lady, but go back to that time when you were a third grader and you had a grown man wanting to touch your body. So we had to go back on that journey, and I was lucky enough to have a niece come and visit us at Christmas time. So my niece was just around Nikki's age at that time, and I remember looking at her and saying to Nikki, look at her. That's who you were when he first began touching you. You're that little girl. And I saw the light bulb go off on her. Okay. You know, it was all of a sudden, that's a sick person. I saw that light bulb go off on her.
Right.
This had nothing to do with, no, this was a sick man. And for me, my other issue was, we've got to talk about this. We've got to tell somebody, because if we don't, we're going to leave other people vulnerable for the same thing. We know that molesters do not stop with one victim. Normally, they don't get caught until the 100th victim, let alone they'll keep doing it because they get a sickness out of knowing that, okay, I got over on you. It's just a sick mind.
Right.
So when I talked to her about going to the authorities, she was dead set against it, believe me. She was dead set against it, and she was not going to cooperate, but the detectives were wonderful. They let me know that, yeah, they really believe she had been molested, but there's time. We have enough time. Go ahead and get her some help. Get her in a good place first. So it's not you don't have to immediately go. And that's what happened. By January, and I'm telling you within a couple of months, because that was, she disclosed to me the Sunday after Thanksgiving, by January, she was asking to go to tell the detective what happened. And we pressed charges, and he's in prison for 15 to 40 years is what he got.
Really?
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
you
ma'am.
All were able to do that. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, we did that. And I have to tell you, I was counseled over and over again not to put my daughter through that. And certainly all of that came from a loving place. But my concern was, but if she doesn't speak up, this is going to keep perpetuating. Because this particular person was around a lot of children. So I have no idea how many, around a lot of children. Who knows how many children he's molested. Nikki even had grown women come up to her during the trial and tell her, grown women now, Andrea, and tell her he molested me too.
Oh.
And I just remember her saying to me, Mom, if they had said something, it wouldn't have happened to me. So, it's a silent crime, but the wrong person is being silent. The victims are being silent. They're walking around with this shame and this guilt that is not theirs to hold. I told my daughter from the very beginning, you hold your head up high because you have nothing to be ashamed of. And the family did, for the most part, not everybody, but for the most part, the family just gathered around and supported her. And I have to tell you this one little piece. The first time we had a family gathering, Nikki was very tentative because she wanted to know whether her family was going to still treat her the same. Were they going to look at her different? Was she going to be approached? Were people going to start asking questions? None of that happened. We talked to them. Look, we talked to them. Nobody came up to her, asked her any questions. She was still the same Nikki, and that makes such a difference. It's almost like she was able to exhale and be herself. She didn't have to be on guard. She didn't have to walk on eggshells. Everybody, she's still Nikki. She's not changed any. And I just think that's so important for so many of the victims that I've talked to. You know, it's ripped families apart because sometimes the perpetuators are biological relatives. We didn't have that story. But I know that that happens over and over and over again. But if somebody doesn't speak up, it leaves the other children vulnerable to be attacked again. And the generations that I talk to, where people come up to me and say, yeah, my mother was molested as well. My mother didn't protect me. And I'm hearing that over and over. I've just been so opened up now to another part of life that I didn't realize it was so prevalent.
Right. What I'm hearing from you, Lisa, and the work that you actually did with your daughter, because that's what you did. You actually did some work with your daughter. I know you said you all went to counseling, but you had to work with her first. And what it sounds like is that you became her champion. You championed your daughter forward, and you championed her on. You became her hero in this particular situation so that she could be strong.
Yes, it was so important. And, you know, I have to tell you, I still, you know, it took me a while. A lot of prayer, Andrea. A lot of prayer. You talk about some prayer warriors that were on the job. I had prayer warriors on the job. We, you know, the Lord was good to us. He continued to let us know that he still got, despite such a hardship. It was very difficult. I didn't tell my oldest son at the time because he had this wonderful job, but if he had found out what had happened to his sister before this man was arrested, he would have been there trying to get his hands around his neck, you know, all those different things. Now, what I'm finding out, not everybody's championed their daughter.
Right.
Sometimes they don't know what to do. Sometimes they don't know what to say. Sometimes I find that the mothers they're terrified themselves, or they're being abused themselves. You know, so everybody doesn't have that same story of my mom believed me.
Right.
Nikki has that story. Everybody doesn't have that same story. Even there was another young lady that went to court with Nikki that we found out he had abused at the same time. That was his adopted sister. And his family, her family did not support her. At all. I mean, in any stretch of the imagination. Actually, she was told to recant the story over and over again just so she could have a family. And because she chose not to, she no longer has that family.
Oh, that's too bad. That is too bad.
I think it's so important for us to go ahead and say, oh, well, you know, I didn't see that. I didn't see what was going on. I didn't know what the signs were. But if my daughter is coming to me with this, then I need to listen. I need to listen. We need to have some conversations. Everybody's family is different, and what the family dynamics may be different. But if somebody's saying that they're abusing my child, my ears are peaked. Like, what?
Right.
You're abusing my child?
That's
not okay. That's not okay.
Right.
And you have to let your daughter or your son. Because now we know there's so much perverseness in this world that our sons are being molested as well.
Right. Now, you said that you've heard stories from other families. Do you have speaking engagements, or how can people come out and have a conversation with you and talk to you about it, you know, in relation to your book and in relation to what's going on in their family?
Well, they can reach out to me through my website, and it's lisargray.com. I had to put that R in there because there was another Lisa Gray out there. So you can reach me through there, through the email. You can get the book through that email. You can learn a little bit more about my testimony on the website as well. I do speaking engagements. I'm a licensed minister, and I'm also counseling now. None of this happened until this happened with my daughter. So
the
Lord's moving me in quite a few different directions now.
Right, right. Wow, this is such a powerful, powerful story, Risa, and I want to just commend you for getting it out, for telling the story, and for helping so many people. It sounds like you are really working with people through their situations. And so I want to commend you, and I want to thank you so much for doing
thank
that.
You.
And I want to thank you for being with me on Michigan Literary Network Radio today to tell us your story. And that's all the time we have. But it's been really good speaking with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome. You have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. And that's it for this edition of Michigan Literary Network Radio. I want to thank Lisa R. Gray again for being a guest on Michigan Literary Network Radio and telling the story about her book, They Don't Tell, Child Abuse, A Mother's Perspective. Anybody wants to know more, visit her website at lisargray.com. And I want to let you know that this Saturday, June 11th, is the Motown Writers Network's second Saturday meetup. From 10 a.m. to noon at the Detroit Main Library in Detroit, right there on Woodward. And remember to stay connected with Michigan's literary community through the Michigan Literary Network and Motown Writers Network at www.motownwriters.com. And you can find us on Facebook. And come on back to Michigan Literary Network Radio next Wednesday, right here on blogtalkradio.com from 5:30 to 6 p.m. to hear more literary good stuff, with a replay of our interview with author Angela Flournoy about her book, Turner House. This has been Andrea Daniel for Michigan Literary Network Radio. Thank you out there for listening. Write a good story. Tell a good story. Thank you so much. You all take care. Bye-bye.